Welcome to the Unitarian Universalist Fellowship of Bennington, Vermont. This talk, delivered on Sunday, January 21st, 2024, is by Bruce Learman on the topic of Simplicity, Patience, and Compassion.
First, these words from the Sensing Ming by Sen Tsan. The great way is not difficult for those who have no preferences. When love and hate are both absent, everything becomes clear and undisguised. Make the smallest distinction, however, and heaven and earth are set infinitely apart. If you wish to see the truth, then hold no opinions for or against anything. To set up what you like against what you dislike is the disease of the mind. When the deep meaning of things is not understood, the mind's essential peace is disturbed to no avail. A few months ago, Jerry Bird had those same words up on the wall as part of his presentation. And as the phrase goes, his talk got me thinking. And this talk is about where those thoughts and readings took me. The universe, our environment, our being, is the process of billions of years of random events, chance encounters, and unpredictable and possibly irreplicable events. I accept the universe is chaotic. Somehow that cosmic chaos isn't the same as the modern chaos we see in our chosen media. News media operates as a sort of a perverse artificial intelligence, sifting stories from around the world, bringing us the most disturbing, emotionally addicting stories to our breakfast table. 2,500 years ago, the world must have had its own equivalent of our chaos, its own disturbing stories. In response to this disquiet in the human spirit, Lao Tzu defined the three treasures as a way to calm ourselves and create a more satisfying relationship with the universe we struggle in. Lao Tse's teachings became the Book of the Tao, the Tao Te Ching. Lao Tzu counseled simplicity, patience, and compassion. What? In this modern age, could we possibly make our lives simple? Try to make life simpler, and you soon run into the daily realities that complicate our lives. How about a simple way to pay a debt? Or simple work? Or simple travel? Or let's look at it by some other measures. How many passwords are you keeping track of? How much time do you spend each week just dealing with your trash? How would you simplify doing your taxes? Patience? Sure, we can cultivate patience with dealing with our partner and children. Well, most of the time. Some of the time. But what about the idiot who's holding up the meeting with paranoid concerns? In fact, it seems to me we spend very little time exercising patience with those who don't share our views. We are in many ways abetted in isolating ourselves from different views. One's patience is seldom tested by those we agree with. Perhaps it's because we seldom practice patience that we're not very good at it. Patience is not the same thing as quietly waiting to make your rebuttal. Cultivating patience often means cultivating the most difficult of modern human skills, listening. Compassion also requires the difficult skill of listening and even more difficult identifying in some way with the suffering of others. We have been conditioned to be skeptical of others' suffering instead of seeking to understand it. It's easy to see the difficulty of exploiting or employing these ancient treasures in our current times. And it's also easy to see why the present absence of Lao Tzu's three treasures has left us with our hostile, toxic society. Certainly, even 100 years ago in China, there was plenty of human suffering to address. But today, it seems much harder to find ways, however limited, to cultivate simplicity, patience, and compassion. A millennium after Lao Tzu, another know-it-all, Sheng San, the third Chinese patriarch, showed up with his reading, the Tsintsing Ming. That was read as our reading today. Tsintsing's laid out a path to enlightenment as detachment from the mind's fixations. Struggling with good and bad, preferences, opinions, constrain our mind when our mind must be free of all constraints in order to see the true nature of the universe. We might not be able to free ourselves from all opinion all the time, but certainly forming opinions and making judgments is incompatible with the meditative state of mind we need when we seek to know the nature of the universe. What do we do when we hold an opinion? Well, first we form it through more or less effort, more if we want an informed opinion. We present it whenever the subject comes up, and sometimes even when the subject doesn't come up. We spend mental effort creating a framework for it and explaining it in a way to have it favorably understood. And of course, we defend it. Think of the time and involvement we spend defending our opinions. And think of the daunting mental and emotional effort if you should ever feel compelled to change your opinion. Reading Sheng San's teachings on opinions, they seem extreme, to the point of seeming ridiculous or at least unattainable by any modern thinking person. So why do we have opinions? Well, isn't the purpose of our education and knowledge to form opinions, to be discerning, to be able to attach value to one idea or brand of detergent over another, to be able to discriminate between dangerous, foolish ideas and ideas with merit? Opinions lead to polarization, especially when so many people are defined for us and for themselves by their opinions. Our social support, our self-esteem, and even our welfare may be dependent upon endorsing a particular opinion. What happens when we don't hold opinions? Sheng San says it enables us to clearly see the true nature of the universe. And I see another more mundane advantage for holding no opinions, or at least fewer of them, or maybe just holding the ones we have less intensely. Having an opinion, defending an opinion, can limit action. Energy we expend in holding on to an opinion is energy we might use just to do things. You might even use your energy to reduce suffering in some way. You might have more time, more energy for looking and listening for suffering and taking action to alleviate it. Foregoing opinions may make us less hesitant to act or more willing to just openly reflect on our present situation, to see a larger perspective, even if we don't act. I'll give you an example of how opinions and judgments can interfere with just doing things. West Philadelphia, what we in Vermont would call the inner city. In West Philadelphia, I served a weekly free dinner supported by an interfaith group, not unlike the one we will support later today. As diners came in, I judged their dress. I judged their manner. I judged their appetites. I judged, do they need this meal? Slowly, over a period of weeks, I became aware of my judgments. Standing with a spoon in my hand, I began to ask myself, why is my judgment of them important to this process? Who cares what my opinion is of them and of this event? What positive value does my opinion have? How is my opinion affecting me? So at some point, after a few weeks, I gave up these judgments. Then I saw all the ways this activity benefited the givers and the receivers, and saw that those labels, giver and receiver, were reversible and therefore meaningless. Our opinions can take away not only from doing, but from hearing and learning. Simplicity, patience, and compassion can reduce suffering. So can letting go of our opinions, or at least softening them so that they don't stand in the way of listening, seeing, doing, or letting go. So what might we discover if we humbly practice simplicity, patience, and compassion in our modern world? Jerry's talk reminded me that though seeking enlightenment is personal, the purpose of seeking enlightenment is to have compassion for all. Our purpose is not just to reduce suffering for ourselves and those immediately around us. Our purpose is to reduce suffering for all sentient beings. And in that, I wish all of us success. Now, there's an aphorism we've all heard about sermons. A good sermon comforts the afflicted and afflicts the comfortable. In that division, I'd have to put myself in the comfortable category. Though I think maybe I'd like a third category, which is uncomfortable. Universalism is part of our faith. And originally, it was founded on the idea that all are saved. And later, by extension from that idea, that there really is no hell. But I think in many very serious ways, there is a hell. And we are living in an existential hell every day. Today, we see all of the evils that Hobbes ascribed to uncivilized life presented to us as hallmarks of civilized life. Hobbes said, uncivilized natural life was solitary, and we are isolated from one another by marketing strategies and inequity. Hobbes said, the uncivilized life was poor. And every day, livable income slips away from more of us, especially our young. Hobbes said life without civilization was brutal, and we see perpetual war cynically waged through proxies. Hobbes said life is short, and it is growing shorter in our country. rising in because rising in numbers because of unintended deaths, drug overdoses, vehicle crashes, and by intentional deaths, suicides. These are the leading causes of death for those in their early 20s. In the previous conception of hell, we entered hell at death after a life of sin. In the current conception, we leave hell at death, granted our absolution. A short life is no longer necessarily a curse. As an example of the uncomfortable hell we have created, consider, both as a metaphor and an object, the automobile. Socially, physically, and subliminally seductive, it encapsulates us and separates us from the raucous world we have created. Its use is made possible by an invisible, ongoing sequence of violent explosions deep in its entrails, where toxic compounds are consumed and converted into poisonous gases. And unusable refuse, old tires, batteries, poisonous metals, are created. Refuse that in turn will demand an isolated repository occupying more of the once living Earth's skin. And will also that refuse will also require additional supplies of costly energy to keep it isolated from us. And the painful irony of this age is that the larger, heavier, noisier, more comfortable and powerful the vehicle, the more enslaved the operator is to those who control the supply of resources on which those vehicle owners are hopelessly dependent. You can take this further and consider our pathetic attempts to reverse the environmental and social damage we have done. Notice how many nostrums were offered that involved more consumption. Buy an electric vehicle. Install a heat pump. Stockpile food and water. Add a safe room. Buy a gun. As a society, consumption has been preached to us for so long, it's now the universal language of our culture. A culture where, out of fear, we ignore the plight of half the human population who struggle to maintain their health, safety, and comfort. Where our children go undereducated, underexperienced, undernourished, and enthralled by dazzling, psychobiologically engineered screens. Culture where we tolerate the obscenity of the billionaire. The culture where we manipulate behavior by redirecting the basic drive of every species to procreate. I'm in the uncomfortable class because I believe there are solutions to these problems. But imagining realizing those solutions is laughably unrealistic in our culture. They are unrealistic solutions because of our unshakable dedication to individual property, and to our disparagement of anything that hints of concerns for the common good. The hell of it for me is that the solutions are conceivable, but not attainable. Now, there isn't time to go into all the history and that I feel has brought us to this predicament, nor to any of the details of the kinds of solutions I see as necessary. But all of them would involve some level of what would be perceived as sacrifice by most of us. Growth-oriented economists and marketers will put their fingers in their ears and babble at the mention of sacrifice. Isn't consumption what has made this country what it is today? Yes, it is. And in response to all this modern peril, I can only offer you these ancient tools. Simplicity, which implies desiring less. Patience, to avoid the easy, deceitful answers based on more consumption. Patience to persist toward a more desirable, sustainable future, which we may not live to see. And finally, compassion, to choose our actions by their equitable, positive impact on everyone. And in that, again, I wish all of us success.